All right, everybody's back, or most everybody's back. This is a little more intimate setting, so I hope we can, like, maybe get rowdy, and you can ask questions and challenge me and be like, no, you're wrong, and because I really like that give and take instead of just me talking the whole time. So feel free to throw up your hand. I really mean that, and say, I don't understand what you're saying, or I don't like that, okay? Jody reminded me to remind you that it's Administrative Professionals Day, and she said, you better text your people. I'm a 7. I said, I don't do that. I've never done that. I like them. When I see them, I'm going to be like, thanks, you do an awesome job. I'll sign a card. But I'm not going to text anybody to say happy AP day. That's Jody's job because she's a 2. She would do that, right? Matter of fact, she coordinated, to your credit. Yesterday, she had one of our social workers go out and buy balloons and candy for our front office. That's what a 2 does. 2s carry snacks around, right? If you find yourself ever carrying snacks around and giving it to people, you just might be a 2. Does anybody do that? Does anybody carry snacks? Admit it. Be honest. What? You carry snacks? Always. And do you share? Okay. You might be a 2. Not saying you are, but that's...
What kind of snacks you got now?
So you're having an unhealthy day as a 2? That's okay. You ate them all? I've got a sister-in-law that we went to Disney, and she had a double stroller, and the back of her double stroller was just bags of snacks and chips and food. And she would always ask, hey, do you want? And that's when I went, I think she's a 2. She's like, sometimes 2s, not to get really down on 2s, but we're going to have fun in the second half, right? We're going to laugh at ourselves. I'm not trying to demean anybody because I got more problems than anybody here. But 2s sometimes assault people with their help, right? It reminds me of, and we all have to be careful with this. We all do. We all, in a helping profession, we sometimes assault people with our help. But Jesus walked up to a blind man and said, what do you want me to do for you? That's an incredible question. Because if I was a disciple hanging out in the crowd that day with my snarky attitude, I would have said, I don't know, Jesus, he's blind. Let's start there. But it's an intelligent question by the one who could assume anything, assumed nothing, and asked a really good question. Because maybe he didn't want to be healed of his blindness. I'm not demeaning blindness. I couldn't do it. But they are very successful. They figure it out. I met a blind farmer in Colorado on a mission trip. A blind farmer. We went to his house. Out his back porch, he had cords, and he would count. And he would grab a cord and go to the barn. He didn't need help. His wife said he would be cutting wood at night, no lights on. Why does he need lights? If you cure his blindness, you screw up his system. He had found a way to be very successful. So we don't always know what people need unless we ask them. In this case, the man had been blind since birth. He was a beggar. He had a gig. He sat at the gate and people gave him money. And so if you cure his blindness, well, who's going to give money to a blind guy that can see? Nobody. But who's going to hire a blind guy that's been blind since birth and has no education or trade skill? Nobody. You might ruin his life. I'm just saying might. Maybe he just wanted a conversation, a sandwich, salvation. We don't know until we ask. So each type has our own little struggle and sin. And with the 2s, sometimes they assault people. They're so excited to help. And they really are. As the Enneagram says, they warm others in the glow of their own hearts. I don't do that. But 2, thank you. He said terrible, but he's a 5, so he would agree with me on this. 2s really are amazing people and amazing helpers, but we all have our struggle. So we're disappointed you didn't bring snacks for everybody. So feel bad about that. 2s feel shame. We'll get into that later. So you can sit there and feel some shame about not providing snacks for everybody. Okay. What's everybody think so far? Anybody bah humbug about this? This is dumb. I can't believe this is, you're getting credit for this. I don't agree at all. This is contradictory to the Bible. Any thoughts, opinions about what we're talking about so far? Again, when people are like, this is like horoscopes, I don't disagree. We're not talking about truth. It's a lens. This is a very helpful lens. I would say this lens is more helpful than a horoscope. But again, it is not the truth of God, right? He has truth. We're working in the shadows. We don't have truth. The Enneagram is a very helpful lens. So if somebody were like, it's just a horoscope, well, okay. I'm not even going to get mad about that. It's just a helpful lens to view the world and to view myself and to get better at this stuff. You know, the Myers-Briggs, I did that for years. And I always said the Myers-Briggs probably came out different whether you were thinking yourself at work or at home. I would score just a tad bit different because I have to be organized at work. I don't have to be organized at home. And so depending on where you're at in your day or what you're thinking about where you, what role you're playing, it can be different. With the Enneagram, you're going to see different aspects of yourself depending on your level of health. And so the Enneagram says you have 9 levels of health. We all talk about this already. We say things like, I'm having a good day or a bad day. Right? That's kind of how we speak of it in common language. We're really saying, I'm not having a healthy day. I'm unhealthy today, is really what we're saying. And so the Enneagram would say that you're always your number and you have been since birth. You might think you're different things in the process of discovering your number. And then we have to get into the wings. Because I'm a 7 with a 6 wing. The 7 gets me, the 6 explains the rest of me. Because sometimes I am a stickler for the rules. And sometimes I break the rules. And my wife goes, you are unpredictable. I said, I know. That's the 7 and 6 wing. The 6 wing says, be efficient. Don't stop and check your Sam's receipt in the doorway. That drives me nuts. Life should be efficient. We're a group of people. We have to cooperate to get along. The 7 in me wants to break all the rules. And so it depends on where I'm at. The 7 is what I am. My wing explains the rest of me. And the wing is the number beside your number. So if we look at the Enneagram circle, Jody's a 2. She can't be an 8 wing. She can be a 1 or a 3 wing. It has to be the number beside it. And that explains kind of the rest of you, if that makes sense. So the Enneagram's a little bit different in that you are always your type. You just have to figure it out until you discover it. Any other thoughts or comments or disagreements about the Enneagram? I know it's just after the first session, did anybody who didn't know their number go, that's what I am? Anybody have that experience in there? No? Nines struggle. They think they're everything but their number. Yep. If I'm working with a client and they do some work and they go, I think I'm a 2 or maybe a 3, 5, 7, or 9, you're a 9. You think you're 5 things, you're a 9. Only 9s think they're 5 things. The rest of us think we're this or that. But 9s think they're everything because they truly can see everybody's perspective. They can see everything so clearly except themselves. So that's what's going on. Then we have to talk about what we do in stress and what we do in health. That's what all those lines are, those zigzaggedy lines. And we'll get into that in just a second. And what's interesting, the 3, 6, and 9, you'll see in the lines, are connected as a triangle. They are uniquely connected. So a lot of times a 3 will be confused. Maybe I'm a 6 or a 9. That's what you do in stress or health. So if you're a 6, on a good day, you can resemble the 9. On a bad day, you resemble the 3. Get arrogant and cocky. But on a good day, you're going to be the peacemaker. And so sometimes that can be confusing. What I like about the Enneagram is it empowers people. So many times we feel labeled and diagnosed. And I just tell people all the time, the test does not tell you what you are. You decide what you are. The test says you're a 3 and you think you're an 8. You're an 8. We want to empower our clients to label themselves and to understand themselves. Instead of coming in and being diagnosed and labeled yet again by a professional who may or may not know what they're talking about. So I love the Enneagram that it empowers my clients to figure out who they are. I don't tell them. I have guesses. But I'm wrong more than I'm right. I'm thinking a client's a 5, and he comes back and he goes, no, I'm an 8. Cool, you're an 8. I don't even argue. Because they've got to understand what they are, right? Good thoughts. Any other thoughts, questions, disagreements, comments before we dive in? All right. I apologize for the people in the front. I like to walk around and travel as I talk, so it's going to make your neck hurt when you turn around to look at me, so I apologize. Here are the types. Let's go through a description of each, and then we're going to dive into each type, and then we're going to talk about some of the overall characteristics of how they connect. Type 1 is my wife. They are principled, purposeful, self-controlled, and perfectionistic. My wife is hardly ever wrong. And I mean that, and I hate that. But she thinks about things 1,000 times before she says them. She has never said anything that she regrets or has to apologize for. I will never know what that feels like because I say things all the time that I have to back up from and apologize for. But she thinks about it and is really hard on herself. Ones are incredibly, you will never be harder on a one than a one is harder on themselves because they constantly want to strive for perfection. My wife walks in a room and sees everything wrong and she doesn't want to, but she can't help it. Right? I walk in a room and go, it looks pretty good. She will point out all the mistakes in the room. They jump out at her like it's 3D. And she can't help that. It's just what she does. And she wants to find out the reason for everything. Who left the microwave door open? We have 5 people in our house and a cat and a dog. I'm not sure. I would just close it. But she wants to find out who did it and how can we solve this problem. That's just her. And in my head, I used to go, now I go, oh, look at that. She's being a one. And I move on with my life because she can be a one. She doesn't have to be like me, right? So it's created an acceptance of her that I didn't have before the Enneagram because, of course, I think I live life the right way. I do for me, and she does for her. And that's a lot better place to be. Gottman, we can kind of blend another theory in here. Gottman calls it contempt. If I think I'm right and I think you're wrong, that's contempt. But I would say, but Dr. Gottman, I am right. And he would go, uh-huh, that's contempt. If I think I'm right and you're right, that's not contempt. That's cooperation. That's equality. If I think you're right and I'm wrong, that's probably no better. That might be self-loathing. So I love the idea that Enneagram helps us get rid of some of the contempt we feel for other people because we do feel it. We love Jesus, but we have irritants, and they should be like me. And a lot of times I think I need to stop having so much contempt for other people because they're doing it the right way for them. Make sense? So, ones, principled, purposeful. Nobody's going to work harder than a one. My wife comes by at 9 o'clock with a laundry basket on her hip and says, so I guess somebody's just relaxing for the evening. And I say, yeah, and you can too. Nobody told you you had to do laundry. You're doing that yourself and it's not going anywhere. Come relax with me. But nobody will ever outwork my wife, ever. Not me. And so she's got to accept me that at 9 o'clock, I work hard. I do a lot around the house, all right? I'm not of my dad's generation. But at 9 o'clock, I quit. I got to stop. And I got to watch a stupid show like Naked and Afraid or Impractical Jokers. Anybody? Is it okay as a Christian to watch Naked and Afraid? It makes me feel like I could survive in the wild, right? I know it's stupid. But if something ever crashes, I'm going to go, I watch Naked and Afraid. Let me be in control here. Right? So she thinks that's stupid because that's not productive. She is always about being productive, not about relaxing. She can barely let herself relax. I'm really good at relaxing. Again, I don't like to brag. Really good at relaxing. I'm also really good at apologizing. Again, I don't like to brag. I may be the world's best apologizer because I've had to do it so much. You get really good at something that you practice. Type 2, Jody and Steve. How many other 2s in here? Raise your hand, be proud. The snack lady back there, thank you. Okay. They are generous, demonstrative. They like to hug a lot. People-pleasing and possessive. They can be on a bad day, possessive. 2s, like we just talked about, they bring snacks around for everybody. They love to show their love. They love to love people because it makes them feel good. We don't have any 2s in our family. Again, we have 1, 7, 4, 5, and 9, but no 2s. But we have a lot of 2s at our office. Most helping agencies, we already said this, are going to be 2s and 9s. A lot of people are going to be attracted to a helping agency. So most of us are 2s and 9s. We have a 7. We have a 5 that does insurance, which is perfect. That's a perfect fit for him. We did have a social worker who was an 8. She left to go start a family. We had one that was a 6. And then we have one that's a 5 now. That's really interesting. Nick. Nick is a 5 as a social worker. That's an interesting fit. He's really good. It's just interesting. Type 3s. Laura's a type 3. They're adaptable, excelling, driven, image conscious. The Enneagram Institute says they're the stars of human nature. Again, right? Because I'm not a star of human nature. They are most likely to be your student council presidents, CEOs, leaders, homecoming king or queen, those kids. Those are type 3s. Very success driven. One 3, as a client said, feelings are irrelevant to me. It is just about trophies. That's not good or bad, right? But they don't feel the emotion of a 2. We'll talk about that later, about how there's these different triads. They're just focused on the task at hand. I love 3s. One of my best friends at church is a 3. I love 3s because our meetings are quick and efficient. We don't talk about what didn't work. We only talk about what's going to work. We run a camp together in the summer, and it's one of my favorite weeks of the year. It's a summer Bible camp, Camp Neotes. Steve was at Camp Neotes for years, years, years. You went to Camp Neotes? Okay, we have to talk. When?
Okay,
where?
Sure, yeah. We're from Neotes.
Okay. That's awesome. I love Neotes. It's the greatest place on earth. I mean, I'm a little biased, but it's the greatest place on earth. In midweek, like on Wednesday or Thursday, we're in the middle of our current week. He'll come up and say, I know what we're doing next year. I'm like, yeah, let's talk about it. Other people would go, are you kidding me? Can we just finish this week before we start talking about the next year? But I love 3s because I'm also future-oriented, so we're always planning 3 steps ahead. And so our meetings are always future-focused and very efficient. We don't spend time talking about what didn't work, and that's typical of a 3. Type 4, I have a daughter who's a 4, so I feel like I know this one all too well. They are the artist type. They're expressive, dramatic, can be self-absorbed, and temperamental. So I don't want to offend any 4s in the room. But the way I describe my daughter, and again, not every 4 is this way, because there's 1,000 flavors of each number, right? But I always describe my daughter as, she is intense either way. If she's having a good day, she's having a great day. And if she's having a bad day, it is the worst day. And she's a puddle on the floor that I can't pick up. And I've had to learn to not react to her overexpression. She's in college now and she'll call me. Dad, it's the worst, blah, 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 this is falling apart. I'm going to drop out of school. I'm never going to commit to anything in life. And it's so hard for me just to not help her. Because then me and my wife talk about it. The next day, I'll check in with her. How's it going? Oh, everything's fine. I'm like, wait a second, weren't you just ready to drop out? And today is not even an issue. It's intense either way. They tend to have very wide range of emotional reactions to things. They're wonderful people. They're the most accepting number of anybody on the Enneagram. My daughter will accept anyone. One of my favorite stories about her, she goes to a large public high school in St. Louis. She came home one day, she was a little bit late coming home, and I said, so, you were late. What, did you have a meeting after school thing? What's going on? She goes, I had a meeting. What'd you have a meeting with? What are you doing? GSA. Girl Scouts of America? I thought that ended in like sixth grade. I didn't think you were doing Girl Scouts. She said, no, the Gay Straight Alliance. I did some quick thinking as a dad. I was like, don't say anything stupid. Don't say anything stupid. And I said, that might be a club that Jesus probably would go to. Good for you. And then I thought about, what's that mean? Does it mean she's? I don't know. I've never thought about it. It's possible, right? But a 4 will accept anybody except themselves. That's the weird. I say, honey, if you could just love yourself like you love other people, you'd be great. But they are so hard on themselves. They feel white hot shame. Nobody judges themselves more than a 4. That's why if I say anything slightly critical, she crumbles. Because she's already doing that 1,000 times. White hot shame. 4s feel like they're uniquely broken. They feel like everybody in the room got a memo that they didn't get. She says to me, Dad, how do you talk to people? I'm like, what? What do you mean? You just start talking, saying stuff, asking questions. I don't know. People are great. She doesn't know how to do that. She thinks. She feels uniquely broken in her own head. Like she's the only one screwed up like she's screwed up. That's hard to carry around. Does that ring true for you? And you're screwed up like every other 4 in the world. Like, join the club. We're all crazy, people. Aren't we all crazy? I say to my clients all the time, Because they go, am I crazy? I go, well, you're crazy, but not crazier than the rest of us. We're all screwed up and crazy. Can we just admit that and be okay with that? Let's stop walking around acting like I've got my act together. I don't. I like being me. But I wish fours liked other people as much, liked themselves as much as they like other people. Because you accept everybody. It's great. Just hard on yourself. Type fives. They are perceptive, innovative, secretive, and isolated. And when I discovered my son was a five, it helped clear the air for us. You can't really know what your kids are until about high school. You can start to get glimpses in middle school, but you don't really know until high school. So don't prejudge people. If you do, if you're like, oh, my son's a three, cool, just hold that thought, okay, because he may not be. I forever thought my daughter was a two because she would bring us our vitamins every night. What kid does that? She would take her vitamins and then bring them out for me and my wife to take. And I'm like, oh, she's a two. My kids kept saying, no, she's a nine, she's a nine. They were right, she's a nine. But we didn't know that till high school, right? So my son is a five. They are incredibly intelligent. They feel safe only in knowledge. Their biggest fear is incompetency. They won't do anything unless they know they're going to be proficient. And they need a lot of time alone. So my son was constantly in his room on his computer. Constantly. And as an extrovert, a seven, I'm like, come on, man, that's weird. He needs that time to recover because fives plan their spending for the day. They wake up and go, okay, I've got this conference, then I got lunch, then I got this, I'll have this time alone, and I plan my spending. And when he was a kid and our plans changed, which they often do as a family, he would freak out. He couldn't handle a last minute change. And it's because he's a five. He had already planned his spending of his energy for the day, and now that all got screwed up. And so it really messes with him. One night, we sat for an hour and a half at the kitchen table, and he told me about all 198 countries in the world, named them and their government and how they're doing and what their economy was and what their major export was. And I said, is that what you're doing in your room alone with your computer? He said, yeah. And I said, well, that's a good thing, because there's a lot of bad things you could do alone in your room with a computer. He loves knowledge. He's the investigator. He loves to dive deeply into a subject. We were talking about taking a language in high school, and we were going to go on a mission trip to Honduras, which our church does every 2 years. And I said, hey, you've got to take a language. Take Spanish, because that'll be really useful when we go on this mission trip. He goes, I don't want to do that. Everybody does that. If the crowd goes left, a five will go right. He said, I want to take Latin. I was like, what? Who takes Latin? Nobody takes Latin in high school. It's a dead language. Why would you want to do that? That's exactly why he wants to do that. He feels safe in knowledge, and he wants to go a different way than the crowd goes. Type six, engaging, responsible, anxious, and suspicious as well. Sixes are most known for overreacting. And since that's my sixth wing, I can own this one. I tend to have very strong emotional reactions to things. And I wish I didn't. I wish I was more reasoned and principled and calm. I'm working on it. I'm actually much better than I used to be. But I tend to have a real strong reaction to stuff, right? Sixes are at once loyal to the team and skeptical of the team. They're full of opposites. Full of opposites. They're at once loyal and fearful, but anxious and suspicious. If you come home to a six, you're going to come home to a ton of questions. By the way, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of memes out there about the Enneagram, and one of them is, what are you most likely to come home to according to the type? With a type one, you're most likely to come home to them redoing the kitchen cabinets. To a two, they're baking a cake. To a three, they're doing a vision board. To a four, they're taking a bubble bath. And I went, oh my gosh, do you know how many times I've come home? Is that true? Isn't that weird? Thank you for your honesty. How many times have I come in home and I'm like, I greet the kids and I'm like, where's Madeline? She's up in our bathtub taking a bath. I mean, so consistently. And I went, oh, because she's a four. I hate baths. They seem stupid to me. What do you do? Right? But fours love bubble baths. It's weird.
I can take
out the bubbles. Just a good bath. Yeah. Fives, if you come home to a five, they're most likely to tell you everything they studied from a research book that day. Sixes, you're going to come home to a lot of questions. Sevens are going to come home to no telling what they're going to be doing at the time, because we're unpredictable. Eights are going to come home to them planning some sort of social justice movement. And with nines, you're going to come home to somebody who's going to tell you everything they wish they had said during the day or thought about how they said wrong during the day, right? So interesting how that works. With fives, you're going to come home to them probably in their room or reading a book or on the computer studying something. They tend to be secretive and isolated. They really hate intrusions of privacy. I mean, it drives them insane. My son never wants us to know what he's doing, ever. It really is offensive to him. I don't care about that because I'm a different type. That doesn't bother me. But that really bothers a five. So we have to be careful about how we ask, where are you going? What are you doing? What friends are you hanging out with? We have to be careful with that. We still want to know that information. It's just about how we ask it because we don't want to assume that we're invading his privacy. He's never really doing anything wrong. He's a great kid. The fives are incredibly responsible. Incredibly responsible. They are very trustworthy, but they hate those invasions of privacy. Type sevens, that's what I am, spontaneous, versatile, acquisitive, and scattered. I'm very scattered. At my best, I'm at a coffee shop reading about the Enneagram or Gottman marriage therapy. At my worst, I'm distracted with Tiger King and all kinds of crazy, stupid stuff during the pandemic. I stopped reading at all because I wasn't healthy during the pandemic. I don't know if anybody was. But I didn't read for almost a year and a half. And I'm at my best when I'm reading, devouring stuff. And I didn't read at all because the world stopped. And so I watched Tiger King and all kinds of... Anybody watch Tiger King? Again, as a Christian, can you watch that show? Okay. Well, I did because I thought it was fascinating, right? Not really healthy, but it was fascinating. And so I have problems staying focused because I see lots of bright, shiny things out there and I want to experience them all. What's been hard for me as a dad is if I get a day off, I want to have fun with my kids. I want to plan a day. So we're going to get up, we're going to go to breakfast, we're going to go on a hike, we're going to go to a movie, we're going to go to lunch, we're going to get coffee, it's going to be awesome. And I have three kids that are introverted homebodies, and they hate those days. So I've had to dial it way back. And I say, okay, we're going to get up, we're going to go to breakfast, and then later we're going to see a movie. My kids are like, that sounds good, because that's a full day for them. That is barely getting started for me. I have a lot of energy, and they don't have a lot of energy. And it's not because they're not good kids. They just don't have that God-given energy that I do. And we have to learn to work together because they're not wrong for not having it. They don't have it. They're much better at different stuff than I am. But I tend to be scattered and want to do a lot of stuff. Type 8s are self-confident, decisive, willful, and confrontational. They're going to lead the social justice movement. Thank goodness for 8s because they're going to root for the underdog. They're going to see an injustice, and they're going to call it out, and they're going to get angry, and you're going to know it. They wear anger on their sleeve. You don't. With a 9, you don't always know what they're thinking or feeling. They're really chameleons. With an 8, you're going to always know. If they're angry, you absolutely knew it 10 minutes before they walked in the room. Like, you feel it coming off of them, okay? Type 9s, receptive, reassuring, complacent, resigned. They have low energy. They can be stubborn and resistant when they don't want to do something. I don't know if that's true for you, but they won't tell you that. They just won't do that. Never. Most 9s aren't confrontational at all. They hate it. Conflict drives them insane. They want to do anything to avoid it. So they'll say yes when they shouldn't say yes. My daughter is constantly asking me about decisions. Dad, should I do this or should I do that? And I go, there are no shoulds. Do what you want. She would rather me tell her what to do. She'd be happier because then it takes the pressure off her. If I said, well, do this, she'd be like, okay, and she would be happy. 9s make the best friends on the planet because a 9 will do whatever anybody else wants to do, right? They just are caught in decisions all the time. Like I said earlier, my daughter pre-regrets stuff. Should I buy this or that? I'm like, you're going to regret it either way. Get something you want. And so we're helping her work through this at an early age, so that she is better at making decisions as an adult, because 9s struggle with decisions. Because there's lots of things you can do. And they have a hard time saying, this is what I want. Because most often they'll say, what do you want, Raquel? And then if you say, I want this, they'll go, okay. And they're happy if you're happy, even if they don't want to do it. And so 9s have to find their voice. I tell Marissa all the time, you've got to find your voice as a 9. The world needs that voice. We need everybody's voices. And if you're hiding behind somebody else, that's not good for the world, right? So we all have our thing to work on. That's a broad sketch of the types. Let's kind of go through it and have some fun. How to get along with a one? You have to do your part. Do your part so they don't end up with all the work, because they will do all the work. They will do all the work. And you have to do your part so they don't feel like it's all up to them. Because what they struggle with, and I'm going to skip that because we're going to get to that at the end. They struggle with resentment. And so it helps them if we do our part to help them out. They get less resentful. Acknowledge their achievements. My wife loved working in retail because she got promoted like 5 times in 4 years. Because in the business world, they go, you're doing a good job. You're going to be the director. You're going to be this. You get an increase in salary. She works for a church now. So one of the things that's hard for her is there's not that achievement and recognition. There's not a bump in pay, and you get to be director now. It's just you're doing what you're doing, and a lot of people don't know what you're doing. And so that's really hard for her because they love that recognition. Encourage them to lighten up, but you have to hear them first. My wife married me because I'm a 7, and I say all the time, we're going to be okay. That's my job. That's my job in the marriage. I know that. But I have to hear her pain first before I get there. Right, I can't just go to the, we're going to be okay, because then she feels dismissed. I have to hear the struggle, hear the pain, and then my job is to go, you know, it's all going to work out. Everything's okay in the end. If it's not the end, if it's not okay, it's not the end. I say that all the time, because it's going to be okay in the end. It is going to be okay. That's my job. Ones at their best are loyal, dedicated, and helpful. At their worst, they're critical, nitpicking, and uncompromising. You will not win a fight with one. I stopped a long time ago trying to win a fight with my wife because she will not lose. She will not lose. She is uncompromising. And so I've just learned to back off. Ones would never, this is just kind of fun. I put this in for fun because we need to laugh at ourselves. Ones would never be late to work or not do the right thing. My wife can't not do the right thing. I'll tell on her. She's not going to listen to this because she doesn't want to listen to anything I say, which is probably smart on her part. But I encouraged her this weekend while I was down here in Florida. My kids are all gone doing different things. I said, why don't you skip church? Why don't you skip and just have a day for yourself? Because she never takes time for herself. Why don't you skip church and you can work on those photos and do those projects and maybe go for a run? She was like, I can't do that. I need to be there. I'm like, I know. I'm just saying maybe skipping church would be the healthier option. I was so proud. I called her Sunday night. She said, I skipped church today. I went, well, look at you. Somebody's growing up a little bit. How about that? Because it's really hard for them not to do the right thing. I mean, they're compelled to do the right thing. It's hard for them to laugh it off when criticized. You want to start a fight with a one? You question their integrity. It will fight you like a tiger. I mean, they will come out at you because they work so hard to be right. Not lording it over you, right? Just to do the right thing. And if you question their integrity, it's really offensive to them. My wife would never relax over being productive. There is always laundry to do. Ones in the room? Ones in the room, raise your hand. Do you feel that? Is that pretty accurate? Okay. Anybody disagree with anything about the one? Anything not true for you? Okay. Twos, the helper, Jody and Steve. How to get along with me. Tell me you appreciate me. Be specific. Not just a good job, but it helps if I say, hey, I really appreciate how you did that thing you did, the report that helped everybody do better. Yeah, something specific like that. Share fun times with me. Steve, yesterday, we weren't going to the tour with everybody. And Steve, 2 or 3 times, said, let's go out and have fun. Well, we need to go do something fun, right? And I like that because I'm a 7. So we went putt-putting, and then we had dinner. And so twos want you to go out and have fun with them. That's important to them. Other numbers, like my wife, she would be like, we're going to go play putt-putt golf. You know, I could read a book. You know, I could go for a run. Like, that seems unproductive to her. But that's important to a two. Take interest in their problems, although they're addicted to helping you, so they're going to focus on yours. Like, they're going to turn it around quick, right? That's what a two does. Twos at their best are attentive, appreciative, generous, and warm. At their worst, they are controlling, possessive, needy, and insincere. Sometimes they need to help. They need to see you doing better. We'll get into this later, but twos get angry when they help somebody and that person doesn't get better. And that's a struggle they have to monitor. Because sometimes people don't get better. Sometimes as a therapist, I hold people's hands while they get worse. I had a young client that was an amazing kid, but at the age of 13, he had a rare neurological disorder and died at the age of 18. It was so rare that they named it after him. It's like, great. Ugh. Like, it's great that it's named after him, but he's gone. He was a great kid. And I knew the whole time counseling that I was just holding his hand until he died, because he wasn't going to get better. And so that's sometimes hard for a two when people don't get better. It deeply pains them to see people get worse. Twos would never refuse to smile at somebody. They would never do that. I can easily not smile at people. But a two is always going to look at somebody and smile. Twos would never not discount a compliment, right? If you say, oh, you did a good job, well, I don't know. They will always discount a compliment. Is that true for you? You look nice today, by the way. That's really nice. See, she just said it's awkward. Okay. That really is, it's a really nice top. Do you see her top? She's, stand up. Let everybody see. It's really cute. And she said, that's awkward. So she can't just say, thank you. It's hard. There you go. She's getting healthier. Twos would not take home an adorable kitten they found. We describe twos as having a curio cabinet of needy people. They have a collection of people that they help. And so a two's going to see an adorable kitten, and they're going to want to take it home. I would see a kitten and go, that's lunch for a hawk. Leave it alone. Survival of the fittest. If he lives, he lives. Who cares? Let's not help. My wife is a one with a two wing. When we're dating, we were going back to my apartment once because the Cardinals were in the World Series. Was it 1996? They played the Atlanta Braves?
Playoffs,
okay. So there was a Cardinal game on, and we were going back to my apartment after dinner to watch the Cardinal game. My wife is the one with a two wing. And so we're walking into the apartment. She goes, what's that noise? I go, I don't know. And we found a squirrel laying on the sidewalk that had fallen out of a tree and hit his head and was like bleeding and unconscious. She goes, well, we have to do something. I'm like, no, we don't. We don't have to do anything. Again, that's lunch for a hawk. Like, we're feeding the ecosystem here. I ended up scooping that stupid squirrel in a box, skipping the playoff game to take it to a wildlife rescue center where I had to pay money for its treatment. Wait a second. I was the Good Samaritan. It just came to me. I was being like Jesus. That's a better reframe, because I've been so angry about that moment my whole life. I missed the playoff game because I was at some rehab center with a squirrel that I'm sure died a couple of days later, and I wrote a check for his care because of my wife. And I was like, man, I would not do that now. I only did that because we're dating. So I was trying to make a good impression, like I care about stuff, but I don't. Three, the achiever, Laura. How to get along with me? Let me know if this is not true. Leave me alone when I'm doing my work. Don't bother me. Give me honest feedback. Don't be brutal, but they like honest, direct feedback. Don't burden me with negative, overdone, my word, emotions. They don't like it. They like to stick to the facts. Emotions are irrelevant. They don't want to talk about them. Is that true? And you are a mom, too. So again, this, like, sometimes if you're a mom, that changes you. When you get older, it changes you. Lots of things changes in life. So that may have been truer as a young person. Then you become a mom, and you become a great mom, and you care about people on a different level. So it may change the flavor a little bit. At their best, they value and accept their partners. At their worst, they are preoccupied, self-absorbed, and impatient. Yes, they are very impatient. Threes would never not make a list of goals. They would not do that. Threes would never say nothing about their accomplishments at a reunion. They're going to let you know. We talked about this in the car the other day. My friend who's a three is the president and CEO of Weekends Only Furniture. If you ask him, hey, what do you do for a living? I work at Weekends Only. Incredibly humble. Of course, the next question is, what do you do there? I'm the president and CEO. So now he gets credit for the humility, even though he's kind of bragging about himself. That's what a three would do, right? And so it's okay, but they're never not going to tell you what they accomplished because that's very important to them. They like to win trophies. Threes would never not take over a meeting when it's inefficient. It just drives them insane, right? One of Lane, he's an elder at our church. One of his greatest struggles right now, Steve, is an elders meeting. Because elder meetings, they tend to meander and talk about people, and it's messy. Being an elder's hard. And he wants it to be a business meeting. So he gets in there and wants to, like, here's the bullet points, let's talk about it, wrap it up, be done. And sometimes elders meetings can go for a long time, right? And that inefficiency is hard for him. He wants to make it more efficient. And that can't always be true. Fours, the artist, how to get along with me. You've got to give them plenty of compliments. They soak it up like a sponge because, again, they're already judging themselves so harshly. That's the voice they hear banging in their head. You're not enough. You're so stupid. The rest of the world's figured it out. What's wrong with you? My daughter soaks it up when I say, I'm really proud of you. You're working really hard. She loves hearing that stuff. Be supportive. Help me to learn to love themselves because they have a white-hot flame of shame. Don't tell me I'm too sensitive. Don't do that. By the way, this is just a therapy thing. We often use that as a pejorative. You're overreacting. Well, how do we judge that? In any moment, if we can figure out the right amount of reaction, like an X and Y axis, then we can figure out the over and the under. But we never accuse anybody of underreacting, do we? We never go, you're underreacting right now, because they appear calm and collected. We only accuse people of overreacting. Can we stop doing that? Can we stop? People are just reacting. What you're saying is, your reaction's a lot for me. That's what you're saying. That would be okay to say. But don't try to get them to calm down by saying you're overreacting, because they're not for them. They're reacting appropriately, and fours are going to react big. Good or bad, it's going to be a big reaction. So don't tell them they're overreacting. Fours at their best are empathic, supportive, passionate, and witty. My daughter has a wicked sense of humor. We get each other. We send stuff back and forth that is just stupid, inappropriate, but hilarious stuff. Because they are good at seeing the world in an upside-down way. They have a really witty personality, right? Like the other night in your magic show, it was funny. You're really witty. And it's different than other people's wit and humor. That's why we laugh at it, because it makes our brain perk up, right? At their worst, they're self-absorbed, jealous, emotionally needy, and moody. They can feel overwhelming to me how much she needs me sometimes in those moments when it's hard for her. And I just have to stay calm, because she's so reactive. I tend to get into that with her. I tend to get into the whirlwind. And my job is to stay calm, but they're so good at getting you to react like them because they're so needy and moody, right? And I can get it. If I get into that whirlwind with her, it doesn't go anywhere good. But she's really feeling that. She's not making that up. She really feels what she's feeling in that moment. Fours would never paint by the number. That's offensive to them. My kids shop at, they're all kind of artsy types, so they shop at Goodwill. They would never go to Target and buy something because that's what other people do. They're going to shop at Goodwill and come up with the craziest, weirdest, to me, weird, outfits because they want to be unique. Fours always want to be seen as having a unique gift or talent sort of set apart. And they really do. My daughter's an incredible artist. Just sees the world in a really beautiful way. But she wants to be seen as unique. She would never paint by the numbers. That'd be offensive to her. They would never think nothing but positive thoughts. They think dark, deep, ugly thoughts. And they're actually good with sitting in those emotions. They're really good at that. They can sit with a friend who's struggling for hours and just be with them, right? They are going to tend to be maybe the Eeyore in your group sometimes. Sometimes, not all the time. But when they get sad, they get sad. And they're okay being sad. If you try to cheer them up, they don't want to be cheered up. They want to feel the sadness for a little bit. They'll come up out of it on their own. So sometimes the best thing you can do with a four is just to sit in the sadness with them. And that's hard sometimes for people. Because I'm a seven. I don't want to be sad. I want to be happy. So let's get up and go watch a movie. Everything will be fine. She doesn't want that. Fours would never decide that soul searching is not important. I can talk to my daughter for hours about the Enneagram and emotions. I can talk for 5 minutes to my son. So I'm wanting to talk more to my son. I'm wanting to talk less to my daughter. They're both different. And neither one's right or wrong. So fives, how to get along with me. You can confirm this. Be independent, but not clingy. They got a clingy radar like a seven does. If I feel like somebody's getting too clingy, I just arm's length, because I don't like that. Speak in a straightforward and brief manner. Don't talk long, but be direct, be succinct, because they're going to spend an hour and a half processing what you just said. I'm an external processor. My son's an internal processor. He lays in his bed and thinks about stuff for an hour before he goes to sleep. He has trouble because his brain is always going. So I know I walk in and go, give me 5 minutes, I want you to think about this, and I walk out because I know he'll think about it. Right? That's what they do. It's an effort for them to get their thoughts into words. When I heard this, I went, yes, that's my son. I can't tell you how many times he would say to me, I don't know how to say this. He would struggle to get the words out because he didn't know how to connect the thought to the feeling. And so I have to be really patient with that and give him time to figure out how to say it. My tendency as a seven is to jump in and try to say it for him. But I've got to give him that space because it's so hard for him to put it into words. It's such an effort that he gets frustrated with himself. And so we have to be patient with fives in that manner. You've got to give them that space to say what they need to say. Fives at their best are kind, perceptive, open-minded, and trustworthy. I'm going to say this. Fives are quite possibly the kindest, most trustworthy people on the Enneagram. And I mean that. They usually always do the right thing. And if they say they're going to do something, they do it without fail. They will never not do what they said they were going to do. Fives would never miss a chance to share their extensive knowledge with you, like my son telling me about all 198 countries in the world. Who does that? Fives do that. We went to the Chicago History Museum when he was like 5 or 6 years old, and he was a reference book kid. Like, he never read stories. He read reference books. And we go into the back where they keep the dinosaurs, and he goes, Dad, that's a Parasaurolophus, and that's a this, and that's a that. And I'm like, how do you know this stuff? I'm just going, look at the bones. You know, I don't know anything. But he had read all the reference books to get ready for that trip. And so when he walked into the room, he already knew what everything was, and he was excited to share that with me. Fives would never throw a big party. So my son's graduating high school. You know what his biggest concern right now is? The graduation party we're going to throw for him. Do we have to do that? I'm like, well, do you want money? Because people from church are going to come over, and they're going to give you a card, and they're going to put money in. He was like, yeah. I'm like, then you've got to have a party, and you've got to talk to people. And he's already worried about it because he would rather skip the whole thing. Because he just doesn't want big parties. He doesn't know what to do. He often looks uncomfortable. He stands off to the side and looks aloof. He's really uncomfortable. So that's what it is with fives. They don't often know what to do in a social setting sometimes. Fives would never, this cracked me up, this is why I put it in here. They would never refer to plants by their common name. They're going to use their Latin name. That's what a five would do. Is that true? Absolutely. Right? If the crowd goes left, they go right. And they're safe in their knowledge. Sixes. The loyalist. How to get along with me. Be direct and clear. Listen to me. Because they're going to overreact. We have to listen to them. Don't judge me for my anxiety because I have a ton of anxiety. Reassure me that everything's going to be okay. Don't overreact to my overreaction. Let me overreact. Let me tell you the butter fight. Yeah, we got to 11:30. I got time. I'm a seven with a six wing. I tend to overreact. One night, we used to do family movie night with my family on Friday nights. So it consisted of pizza, popcorn, lemonade, and usually a Disney movie or Pixar movie. Halfway through the movie, I would get up to make popcorn. I don't want to brag because, you know, I'm a very humble guy. We've established that, right? But I made really good popcorn. I had my system down. Butter, 45 seconds in the microwave. Pop the popcorn dry air popper, I'd spin it, and I'd like drizzle that butter on, and then had the right amount of salt, and I'd sprinkle it and spin the bowl. I had a whole thing down. Well, this one night, put the microwave in the butter in the microwave, and the butter exploded all over the microwave. That had never happened. In 13 years of doing this, that had never happened. I'm like, well, that's weird. So it's Friday night, I'm tired, I don't want to be doing this, but I cleaned the microwave. Number two, I'm like, what is going on? I'm like, okay, so this is weird. So I clean it third time. You'd think I'd be smarter, but I'm not. Third time. And I said to my wife, did you buy different butter? What is going on with the butter? Did you buy it from Sam's? What is wrong with this? And I kind of overreacted. Then she overreacted. and started yelling at the kids, "Why do you make Dad make popcorn?" And the kids were like, "We didn't make Dad make." And suddenly my house is in this like kerfuffle over butter. And I walked in and said, "Everybody, stop. Me and Butter are having a fight. We're fine. Me and Butter are going to go to therapy. We're going to work it out. Don't get mad at me because I'm mad at Butter. Nobody asked me to do this. It's fine. Just let me clean it up. I'm just trying to figure out why the butter exploded." And then, of course, my wife, who's much smarter than me, was like, "Why don't you put some plastic wrap over it and then poke a hole in it so it doesn't explode?" I'm like, "Oh, that's a good idea." So we solved that problem. But don't overreact to my overreaction. Let me stomp around and throw a tantrum and just look at me and go, "Are you done now?" Let me do my overreaction. Don't overreact to my overreaction. Sixes at their best are warm, playful, open, and loyal. At their worst, they're suspicious, controlling, inflexible, and sarcastic. It's one of my big struggles, is sarcasm. It was my family's native tongue. Did anybody speak that growing up? We spoke sarcasm. And then you realize in your marriage it's not helpful. So I had to find a different way to talk to people because sarcasm was all I knew. Sixes would never not seek outside opinions when making a big change. They would never hear a noise at night and assume the best. They would never do that. I had a client who's a six. He said, "I've been waiting for the pandemic all my life." I was ready. Because he always was fearing the worst anyway. And he said, honestly, he goes, "I'm doing okay." He goes, "I had been preparing for this all my life." He's not a prepper. He's not crazy. Six is just, as a six, I go to the movie theater and I sit with my kids and I plan out what to do with an active shooter. That makes my brain happy. If somebody comes in, we're going to crawl, we're going to go out that exit. Okay, I got a plan. That makes me feel good. You might think I'm weird, but sixes love to plan for disaster. I'm always planning. I don't respect men, I'm just going to get real judgy here, who wear flip-flops to the zoo with their family. What do you think you're going to do if somebody kidnaps your child? You're going to run after them in flip-flops? I don't think so. So I always wore my best shoes, my best running shoes, when we went to the zoo. It's never happened, but I was thinking about it. And when I would see a dad with flip-flops, I'm like, "I don't respect you." I know that's incredibly harsh to judge people like that, but that's what I do.
I don't respect
those.
They're going to have bad feet.
I have real severe foot pain, and I wear really good shoes, and I don't really walk on rocks or anything. How do people do it in flip-flops? I don't understand how they go home at night and they're not in tremendous pain.
So you're saying jealous? Yeah, probably.
I guess I am jealous. Some guys could probably outrun me in flip-flops. Yeah. It's sad, but it's true. Sixes would never go to a new doctor without questioning their credentials. And nothing wrong with that. Yeah, we need to know who we're talking to. Type sevens, me. I love talking about me. Somebody said once, "I wish I loved anything in the world as much as a seven loves being a seven." I went, "Oh, that's me. I love being a seven. I really do. I really enjoy it. And I wish a four enjoyed being a four as much as a seven enjoyed being a seven. Because we think we're awesome. We're not. We just think we are, right?" How to get along with a seven? Give me companionship and freedom. Steve has been the best boss I've ever had in my life. And I'm not just saying that because he's here. I mean it. I used to be in sales, traveled around, was never in one spot for very long, and that speaks to my personality. And when I became full-time therapist at CFS in 2007, I was suddenly sitting in an office all day. That is depressing to my soul. And so he gave me permission to take breaks to go to Starbucks, to do reading, to take my computer, do emails, do work. But just getting out and being in Starbucks and hearing the music and the people and the noise helps me. I get less done in a quiet office with the door closed. I can't do that. I get too distracted. But if there's a lot of distractions, I can get focused. It's weird. So give me the freedom to do that, and I love that. Is that true for you, number seven back there? That's true for you too? Yeah. Isn't it weird that we can focus better at Starbucks with a lot of distractions going on? I have to have something else going on. My wife, who's a one, is the opposite. She went to the University of Illinois, and she talked about, I forget what she calls them, but it was this level where everything was dark, and you couldn't talk, and you got in a cubicle by yourself, and it was completely silent. She said, "That's the only way I could study." I'm like, "That sounds horrible to me," right? I need a lot of like bright lights and noise going on. That's weird. That's pretty unique to sevens. Engage me in stimulating conversation. Jody can tell you all the stupid things I talk about that I will not mention here because I don't want to get in trouble. But it's fun for my brain to think about really weird, non-typical things and to talk about it. So I either like stupid talk or deep talk. I don't like the in-between. I don't like the, hi, Bob, how's it going? How's your 401k doing? What you doing at work? What's your latest project? I hate that stuff. I either want to talk about Ricky Bobby and Talladega Nights, or I want to talk about God and the Trinity. There's no room for the in-between for me. Is that true for you also, Seven? I'm calling you Seven. Is that okay? Okay. Yeah, I like stupid talk or I like deep talk. I don't like anything in between. It drives me insane. I feel trapped, right? So engage me in stimulating conversation. Listen to my stories that you're doing now, which I appreciate. Listen to my stories and grand visions. Don't be clingy like a five. I have a radar for that stuff. If somebody wants to be my friend, I'm like, I don't mind being your acquaintance or like a buddy when we do stuff, but I got enough friends. I got too many friends, and I got a real radar for that, right? Because I don't like clingy people. What I love about my wife is that when we're dating, she was not clingy at all. I loved that about her. She was independent and would do her own thing, and I found that appealing. I'm like, yeah. If she had been really clingy, I would have had enough trouble in the relationship as it was. If she'd been clingy, I don't think we would have worked well. Sevens at their best are lighthearted, generous, outgoing, and fun. At their worst, they are narcissistic, opinionated, defensive, and distracted. We can be really harsh. We'll get into the stress. But I'm, like I said earlier, I'm super fun dad until I'm not. And then I'm really not. And I'm working on that because I can be harsh. Sevens would never tell a story without exaggerating. I have actually worked on this in my life because I found when I would tell stories, I would throw in, the body of it was true, but I would throw in a lot of untruths to make it better. And it bugged me. Because I wanted to be a person of integrity. So I've actually really worked on this before I ever came to the Enneagram. But when I read that, I went, oh my gosh, I've struggled with that all my life. You know, a story could just be a tad better. Like Peter in the fish story, right? Peter in the walking on water story. You know he exaggerated that there were sharks there when we all know there wasn't. So in that respect, he'd be a seven. He'd probably embellish that. And so we have to be careful with that. Sevens would never spend time in silent meditation. That would drive us insane. And sevens would not think about how something could be done faster with shortcuts. I'm a big shortcut guy. If there's traffic up ahead, I'm going to go off on a side road, even if it takes me longer, because I have to be moving. I can't stand to be stuck in traffic. It really wears on me. It doesn't my wife. She could sit there all day. She's like, what are you going to do? You know, stay in traffic. You'll get there eventually. But I'd rather go down a side road as long as I'm moving. Right? So that's characteristic of a seven, too. The eight, the challenger. How to get along with me? Stand up for yourself. If you wilt in front of an eight, they have no respect for you. You've got to stand up to an eight. They like that. They love the challenge, right? I'm a little bit of an eight, like a tiny little bit, in this respect. Does anybody know, ever watch the show Biggest Loser? It's not on TV anymore. There were two trainers. There was Bob and Jillian. Bob liked to hug you. Jillian liked to get in your face and yell at you. So my wife and I used to watch the show. We also work out. And I said, if I ever go on that show, or if I ever have a trainer, then I have to pick between Bob and Jillian. Bob would drive me insane. Don't hug me. I don't want you to comfort me. I want you to get in my face. I want you to be that coach that grabs somebody's face mask and yells. I want you to get in my grill. That gets me fired up. And so eights are like that. They love to be challenged. They don't want you to wilt when they become challenging. They want you to stand your ground or they won't have any respect for you. They're assertive. Don't assume it's personal because it is not. None of it's personal. That's just who they are. It can feel super personal. It's not. Side note, the Four Agreements. If anybody's ever read the Four Agreements, it's a whole book. Don't read the book. Get the postcard. Number two of the Four Agreements says, nothing anybody says or does has anything to do with me. The problem is this world feels super personal. When people say, I don't think you're the therapist for me. I think I want to find somebody else. That's not personal. They're allowed to. Therapy is about fit. It's about dating. It's about finding that connection. And if they don't find that with me, they deserve to do themselves a favor and go find it with somebody. It's not personal. But with an 8, it can feel real personal because they're going to come on strong and they're going to get in your face and they're going to tell you what's wrong with you. And that feels super personal. It's not. So don't assume it's personal because it ain't. Be vulnerable. This is the weird part about the 8. Be vulnerable and share your feelings because they want to cheer for you. They are the world's best advocates. They root for the underdog. I've got a sister-in-law who's an 8. She wears it on her sleeve, but if you're the underdog, she is going to be your greatest champion. That's really where 8s are at their best. The social justice movement was made for 8s, where they can finally express anger at injustice and try to change something, because people don't change unless you get angry. I don't know Rosa Parks. I don't know much about that moment. But that day when she refused to go to the back of the bus, she wasn't happy. She wasn't like, no, I'm enjoying the view up here. I'll just sit up here for a while. She was angry. She was angry at the injustice. And it changed stuff. So anger can be an appropriate response sometimes. The Bible says, just don't let the sun go down on your anger. Don't live in it. But be angry. Because Jesus cleared the temple out. And he was angry at how they were misrepresenting the God that he knew. 8s at their best are loyal, caring, positive, and straightforward. At their worst, they are demanding, arrogant, combative, and quick to find fault. And that can be hard. That's why it feels so personal. 8s would never not state their opinion. You're never going to not know what an 8 thinks. They're going to tell you before anybody will tell you. 8s would never not try to win. Life is a competition. They're going to try to beat you on something. And 8s would never say, fine, let's do it your way. They would never say that. They want to do it their way because they know best. Finally, the 9, then we'll get into some other stuff. We've got about 30 minutes left. Perfect. How to get along with me with a pacemaker. Type 9 says, how you ask is really important. That's frustrating for me because I don't want to take the time with a 9 to do that. But they don't like pressure and expectations. They just resist the pressure and expectations. They like to be of service, but don't take advantage of this. 9s are distracted people. They're hard workers. They just do everything but the thing they should do. So our worship minister at church, Jeremy, he is one of the most helpful, hardworking people ever. But he will get distracted helping everybody else do their thing and not his thing. And so he has to learn to say no to people, which is hard for a 9 because they want to say yes to everybody. So they want to be of service, but we've got to be careful not to take advantage of that because they will knock themselves out to try to help you. Ask questions to help them get clear. This is hard for me, but this has helped me in our agency. Again, we're a bunch of 2s and 9s. I'm very direct, very straightforward, very future-oriented. I don't want to take time to ask questions. But if I'm working with a 9, I'm trying to work on, ask them what they think. Don't tell them what I think. I've got to ask them, what do you think? Now, Jesus was the master at this. He consistently asked good questions in his ministry. Who do you say that I am? Well, what do you think the parable means? He constantly turned things around on people. I need to be a better question asker to help 9s because it helps them think through their thoughts because they have so much trouble deciding. It helps them get clear about what they're thinking if I can ask them a ton of questions. So just one little way to get along with a 9 better. In relationship, 9s at their best are kind, gentle, reassuring, and non-judgmental. At their worst, they are stubborn, passive-aggressive, unassertive, and can be very defensive. Very defensive. 9s would never engage in a screaming match with somebody. Ain't gonna happen, ever. They would never make a decision without asking for an opinion. My daughter asking all the time, Dad, what should I do? There are no shoulds. Decide. I'm not gonna tell you, because that would be easy, and you wouldn't grow. They would never express anger directly at somebody. So, let's take a little break here. We've kind of talked about all 9 types. Does anybody have a clearer guess as to what you might be based on what we just talked about? You know, I don't buy that. I think that's just what the Enneagram says because they say half the world's a 6. Well, you haven't tested half the world. A lot of people don't know about the Enneagram. I think they're just saying a large portion of us are, they fit in the sixth category. Fours and fives tend to be pretty unique. Like, you can really spot them from a mile away because they're just different the majority of people. Ones are very unique in how hard they work and how principled they are. So sometimes it's easy to figure out if you're one or three, four or five. Nines are a little bit murky. Sixes are a little bit murky. And so I think the best guess is that most of us tend to be loyal and team players. We live in tribes, right? And so it's easy to say that half the world's a six, but I don't know that. But I think it's, I probably overestimate non-sixes because sixes aren't so unique like a four or five. I tend to see all the other numbers first before I see a six. That's my bias. So I don't buy that half the world's a six. That's just what the Enneagram says. That makes sense. So the Enneagram does go into how birth order and Enneagram ties together. I've not spent much time with that. You know, Adler was big into birth order. And there's a lot of truth to the birth order theory. And so there are, if you Google birth order and Enneagram, you'll find lots of good articles to read about that. I haven't spent much time with that. I bet there's a lot of interesting research into that stuff. I've thrown in some of these little cartoons just to kind of give your brain a break from all my talking and yammering on about the Enneagram. But this is what different types would do on a coffee break. A six is going to check the wiring because he doesn't want a fire. An eight is going to tell somebody to make it snappy and get something done. A one is going to say that the report's done early and done well. A three is going to be off by themselves on the phone saying, I hear you need a speaker at the Lions Club. A two is going to be comforting a four who's crying. A nine is going to just chill out and relax and not think about anything. A five is going to read a book, and a seven is going to jump on a trampoline. Those are pretty accurate as to what we might do during a coffee break. Good, we got 25 minutes to buzz through this stuff. Is that okay? Everybody doing okay? Does anybody know more about what they are after that discussion about all the types? Do you think you have a better idea or just more confused? You're shaking your head. So I notice people shaking their head. And you also have a cute baby, which is super distracting. So what do you think you are?
I
think you're nine? Okay. Again, nines most often misdiagnose themselves.
Yeah.
Because they can see everybody's perspective. They really can. If you, between a two and a nine, we'll get to the sins. The sins really help you identify exactly what you are. But... What? And I don't say sin to make you feel bad. We all have a struggle. We all have a main struggle. And that really helps hone it in what type you are. But a nine can sit in the room with a Trump supporter and a Biden supporter and get both. And not everybody has that gift. A nine has that gift. They can understand everything. I understand why you voted for him. I also understand why you didn't vote for him. A nine can get it all. And some of us have trouble with that. A two would have more trouble with that. Because of the helping portion of that. So, all right. This is also going to help. You can kind of narrow it down to triads. So these are all nine numbers, but they divide up into these triads that are really helpful for figuring out which one you are and some of the things that you do. So the 8, 9, and 1 is in the instinctive center, the gut triad. 2s, 3s, and 4s are in the feeling center, the emotion triad. And 5, 6s, and 7s are in the thinking center. This describes what you do when life happens. When you get that phone call, not a normal phone call, out of the box, bad phone call, what do you do? An 8, 9, or 1 is going to feel something physically. They're going to faint. They're going to throw up. They're going to feel something in their belly. They're going to feel anxiety. They're going to feel tenseness in their muscles. My wife's a 1. She most often says, I have a headache. My shoulder's tight. My stomach's upset. Don't you feel these things? And I say, I really don't. Stress doesn't do that to me. But an 8, 9, or 1 is going to feel something physically when life happens. A 2, 3, or 4 is going to feel an emotion when life happens. A 7, 6, or 5 is going to think. So I got a phone call, one of those phone calls you don't want to get. My wife was supposed to be home. She wasn't home. That was weird. She called me and said, I've just been in an accident, and I was T-boned at Sulphur Springs, and I'm in the ambulance right now going to the hospital. I said, I'll be right there. Hung up the phone, said to the kids, Mom's been in an accident. She's okay. Going to go check it out. Eat dinner. I'll call you as soon as I know something. On the way to the accident site, I'm thinking about the budget. I'm thinking about, okay, that car's total. Get her in the minivan. We already have a minivan. We don't need to get another one. I'll get a Nissan Sentra. That's a four-door car. I know that there's plenty of those around. I want to get it in this price range because here's my budget. It's about maybe $250 for that car. We're going to be okay. That's what I was thinking on the way to the accident site. I love my wife dearly. If I lose her, I'm broken. I'm broken. But I do what a seven does. I think. I go deep into my thinking because that's where I feel some control and feel safe. It's not that I don't love her. Now, if she had called a husband who's a 2, 3, or 4, they would immediately cry. They would immediately feel pain and suffering. If you call an 8, 9, or 1, they might faint or throw up. So we all react differently to life. If somebody were to burst in the room and say, "You just lost your best friend," I would go, "What happened? Well, that's interesting." Now, I would cry at the funeral, but in the moment, I'm going to think. And if I'm with somebody who didn't know my friend, like if you didn't know my best friend growing up, Phil Fletcher, right? If you tell me Phil just died of a heart attack, I'd be like, "Oh my gosh, I know he had surgery a few years ago. I wonder what happened to Pat. I wonder what, when's the funeral?" I start thinking about stuff. Steve would cry because he's a 2. Steve would tear up. And then I'd be like, "What's my problem? He wasn't your friend," right? But then an 8, 9, or 1 might be like, "Oh, I'm sick to my stomach, you know, I need to go throw up." And so we all respond to life differently depending on what triad we're in. Does that make sense? So that can also help us figure out our number if we're having trouble with that. 8s, 9s, and 1 struggle with anger or rage. 8s wear it on their sleeve. 1s don't want to feel it. I mean, 9s don't want to feel it at all. And 1s turn it inward. You will never know they're angry, but they're angry. So each triad deals differently with this emotion, fear, shame, or anger. So 8s push their anger out. 1s drive the anger inward to be better and more perfect. 9s feel it both ways and will just say, "I never get angry." And 9 will say, "I never get angry. That's not true. That cannot be true." They want it to be true because they don't like those messy, gritty human emotions that we all have to struggle with. 9s don't want to admit that they get hungry and horny and angry. They don't like that because they want to be purely spiritual. And that's great, but you've got to admit that there's this stuff inside us we have to deal with. So 8s, 9s, and 1 struggle with anger and rage. 2s, 3s, and 4 struggle with shame. So 2s drive their shame out by helping people. That's how that they deal with their shame, is by making other people's lives better. 3s feel it both ways, so a 3 will most often say, "I'm fine. I'm fine." They're not fine, but they can't admit that they feel the shame because they're so achievement-oriented. Shame has nothing to do with achievement. And so they just deny that they feel it. And a 4 drives that shame inward, and they beat themselves up all day long. They feel white-hot shame. 7s, 6s, and 5s, we have to deal with fear. A 5 will drive that fear inward, and then he's going to go study something to feel better about it. I drive my fear outward by trying to get busy with stuff. I'm going to go be active to deal with my fear. I'm going to do an activity physically, go work out, ride a bike. And then 6s feel that pressure from both and most often won't admit the very thing they feel the most, which is fear. They have trouble with that. All right. I want to talk about the sins. We're going to skip through some of the stuff, okay? So let's talk about the sins, because this is really where you can hone in on what your type is. Does everybody see that? Very back page? Okay. Oh, yeah, I redid my presentation because I wanted to separate these, but I'd already sent the print job to be done. So sorry about that. I wish it was a little bit bigger. Can everybody read it okay? Okay, good, 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 good. Let's talk about the sins because I'm not sure what's going on with my computer. If we look at the top, the 9, the struggle and their sin is sloth or laziness, right? That's what sloth is. It is real. And don't misconstrue this. 9s aren't lazy people. They're distracted people. They do everything but the thing they should do, right? My daughter will walk around the house, and I say, "What are you doing? Are you avoiding?" Because she's got homework to do. Guess what she doesn't want to do? Homework. So she'll come down and talk to us, or she'll offer to do chores. So she's very helpful and very busy. She's just not doing the thing she should do, which is homework. Because they don't like that. So they struggle with this sloth. And it really is an issue of distractibility. So we have to be careful when we look at the sins. Don't just go, oh my gosh, let's talk about number eight. I had a guy after a presentation come up, he was like, well, I'm a number eight because of lust. I lust a lot. I'm like, that's not what we're talking about. The sin of the eight is a lust for control or intensity. That's not sexual lust, right? If that were true, every guy would be an eight, I guess, because we all have to figure out what to do about that. But that's not true. The eight, their sin is a lust for debate, intensity, control. That's what they struggle with. So they have to be better at finding peace with people. With a one, anger is the sin. A better flavor of it is resentment. Ones resent people that don't work as hard as them, which is everybody else, right? Nobody's a one but a one. They're going to outwork everybody. The problem is they feel that internal resentment that other people don't do the right thing, don't stay till the job is done. They've got to deal with that resentment. I'm not going to ever work as hard as my wife. My wife has to be okay with me relaxing. I work hard, but she will sometimes be resentful that I give myself time to relax. I'm great at self-care. So one of the speakers was like, you need to be better at self-care. I'm like, I'm awesome at that. I am not afraid to take care of myself and be selfish. I'm really not. My wife is terrible at it. She would say to me when we have young kids, she would say, you don't give me any time to run. I said, honey, time is not mine to give. That'd be super cool. I'd be a god if I could give people time. You have to take that time. If you come to me and say, I want to go for a run, you got the kids, I'm going to say 100% of the time, yes. But what am I going to go to you and say, do you want to go for a run? You have to be in the mood. And she almost won't allow herself to take a break and then resents other people who do take a break. So that's the sin of the one. Sin of the two is pride. It is not pride in themselves. They are the most humble people. Steve Autry is incredibly humble. I mean that. He didn't know he was going to be getting that award or the Lifetime Achievement Award or whatever. He was like, I haven't done this long enough to get this award. That's what a two would say. They're incredibly humble. Their pride is in seeing other people get better. And when other people don't get better, they get frustrated, right? So their pride is in seeing their help have a good return. Threes struggle with deceit. And it's not that they're not truthful people. They're actually very harsh sometimes in their truth to other people. They lie to themselves. They lie to themselves and say, I'm fine. And they're not fine. So they have to be more honest with themselves where they are emotionally. Fours struggle with envy. And it's not that they envy other things. They just want to be normal. They just want to be like everybody else in the world. So they envy this memo that they think everybody else got that they didn't get. But it's not their envy for things. Fives struggle with avarice. It's a good word. Stinginess, greed, and it's not for things. It's for time. My son, if we go to church, he needs that same amount of time back in his room. Almost second for second. I don't need that. I can go all day long doing stuff. He needs that time because he needs to recover his energy. And so sometimes he's stingy. Not when he's a very generous kid with stuff. He'll let you have anything. He's stingy with his time. Almost second for second. Sixes struggle with fear. And it's a fear of loss of support. It's a fear that a relationship is going to be broken or taken away from them. Seven struggle with gluttony. And I went, when I read this, I was like, gluttony? I don't have a food issue. I do intermittent fasting. Actually, I don't need a lot of food, right? I've eaten more this week than I would normally eat, and I don't like it. My gluttony is for activity. And I went, ooh, that's what I do. I'm constantly busy doing things so I don't have to think about the negative things in my life. I'd much rather go on a trip than look at the bank account. Because the bank account's going to make me feel bad because there's not enough in there. There's not as much as we need. But it's fun to go to a movie, right? And so my gluttony is for activity, and that's what drove a wedge between me and my kids because I'm constantly seeking the next thrill. I'm safe. I'm not jumping out of planes. I'm not doing a bungee cord thing. I'm very safe. But I like to experience life. My kids want to stay home. And so I had to tone down my gluttony for activity. It's one of the things that's helped me. With eights, oh, we already talked about that. So we've gone around the circle on the sins. Does that help you, mom with the baby, identify? What, did she leave? Was she right outside? Did that help anybody identify maybe what your type is according to what you struggle with in your sin? Let's talk about the habitual posture, and then let's talk about wings. So on the bottom of the page, stances of each type, I don't know if there's a page number with it. 3s, 7s, and 8s are in the aggressive stance. We are future-oriented. We are action-oriented. We have the most energy of anybody on the Enneagram. So I love my meetings with my three best friends because, again, we are efficient. We are focused on the future. We are not talking about the past. My kids are all in the withdrawing stance. 4s, 5s, and 9s. Low energy. Tend to be introverted. Tend to be homebodies. They look towards the past a lot. My kids all regret a lot. My daughter after high school said, "Dad, I never took a silks class." What? You know, in the circus when those people climb the silks and the climb down or whatever? She never took that. I'm like, "I didn't know you'd want to take that, because that seems stupid to me, because I don't think they offer that as a class." Guess what she's taking in college? Her third silks class. Right? So she had a lot of regret about something that I didn't even know was going to be a regret. They look back a lot. They live in the past a lot. All my kids like an old aesthetic. So if they're going to live in a building, they want it to be an old building, not this new modern stuff. I like new modern stuff. So it's weird how it plays itself out. My kids all love the old stuff. My daughter collects old radios, TV. She was so proud. She got an old TV and hooked it up to Roku. I'm like, why would you? There's so many good, amazing TVs out there for like $200. Why would you want that TV that's the square tube TV? Because it's from like the 1950s and still works. So she lives in the past quite a bit. 1s, 2s, and 6s are in the dependent stance. They're very good at being present. My wife can sit at the dinner table for an hour and a half. Goodness, that drives me nuts. Right? But she's all the time saying to me, "Why do you get up and do stuff?" I'm like, "Because the dishes have to be done. Because then I got a list in my head of things I got to do." She says, "Why don't you just sit with us?" She is really good at being present. So 1s, 2s, and 6s are very present-oriented. 4s, 5s, and 9s are oriented to the past. And 3s, 7s, and 8s are oriented to the future. Does that make sense? Any questions about that? Let me see if I can pull up real quick. Let's talk about this last thing. We got 5 minutes left. I don't know what happened. There we go. Okay, cool. We're not talking about the sins, but I want to talk about all these little connections. You see all these lines, right? What does that mean? So if you notice, there's a triangle. 3s, 6s, and 9s are connected. So it talks about what do you do in stress and what do you do in health. So a 3, Laura, when you are having a good day, you're going to look like the best parts of a 6. Loyal, team player, right? On a bad day, you're going to look like the worst parts of a 9. You're going to be distracted and stubborn and want to not do anything, right? So with 3s, 6s, and 9s, health goes clockwise, unhealth goes counterclockwise, right? So if you're a 9, when you're having a good day, you're actually going to look like the best parts of a 3. You're going to get a little competitive, a little energetic, and you're going to get some stuff done. But a 9 on a bad day is going to get super suspicious and anxious and defensive, like a 6. So that's what the lines mean. For example, my wife's a 1. When she's having a good day, she looks like the best parts of a 7. That's why we got along when we were dating. We would go out because we didn't have any bills or kids or laundry because we were both single. And we would go out and she was a ton of fun. I was like, "Well, she is not only hot, she is a lot of fun. She's a good person." I was like, "I've got to be with her." I didn't know what was going to happen when we had kids and bills and laundry and dogs and cats, right? And so she looks like the best parts of a 7 on a good day, but guess what? I look like the worst parts of a 1 on a bad day. So when I'm having a bad day, I can bark and I want things done right when the day before I didn't care. But when I'm having a healthy day, I look like the best parts of a 5. It's me at Starbucks diving into the Enneagram, going deep into a subject. That's what a 7 looks like when they're healthy. A 1, when they are having a bad day, look like the worst parts of a 4. My wife tumbles. I say it all the time. I'm like, "Honey, you're tumbling. Because if something's bad, it's bad. She once said to me, we've never been happy in our marriage. I'm like, I have to hear the pain first. Tell me what's going on. Well, it's this and it's this and it's this. We all struggle, right? And then my job is to say, we're going to be okay. We're going to figure it out. And then a few days later, she was like, you know, we have a great marriage. I'm like, that's what I've been trying to tell you. Glad you're back finally on the train. But when things are bad, they're really bad. She tumbles, and I'll say, I put up my hands and I go, honey, 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 you're tumbling. Stop. We can talk about it, but don't tumble. Because she looks like the worst parts of a four on a bad day. Twos have a lot of pride in seeing other people get better, and when it doesn't happen, let's see, twos, yeah, that's right. Twos get controlling and angry like an eight, right? When they're unhealthy, they look like the worst parts of an eight. But when they're healthy, twos can look like the best parts of a four. Very accepting of anybody, right? Creative, into beautiful and artistic things. Fours, at their best, can look very disciplined, like a one. My daughter, on her good days, she's going to work out, she's going to show up at work on time, and she's having a good day. On her worst day, she can look like the worst parts of a two. She can get very possessive and very needy on a bad day. So that's what all those lines mean. Does that make sense? I think we covered all of them. Eight will look like the best parts of a, no, will look like the best parts of a two on a good day, right? They champion other people. They're really helpful. They look like some of the worst parts on a bad day of a five. They tend to be withdrawn, give up, introverted, closed off. I think that covers all of them. Did I leave any out? I think we got through all of them. So, okay. We got like 1 minute left. Did this help anybody figure out more closely what you think you might be or solidify a thought? I thought I was a nine, but I wasn't sure. Now I know. Did this help anybody? Did it move the needle at all? Yeah, so I don't, there's so much to do for a presentation like this. We just skim the surface. Enneagraminstitute.com. If you go to your type page and scroll down, there's a lot of good information on the Enneagram Institute. There is your addiction section. Again, we've established that I don't like to brag, but I have the biggest addiction section of anybody on the Enneagram. I haven't ever done a drug, but if I'm going to do a drug, it's going to be nicotine, caffeine, cocaine, amphetamines. And I went, yeah. Right? It never made sense to me to smoke marijuana and chill out watching a movie. I was like, why would people want to do that? It's not a moral thing, but that doesn't sound like any fun to me. Well, that's fun to a different type. But if you said, do you want to chill out and watch a movie and smoke marijuana, or do you want to do a line of cocaine and Uber to Vegas, I'm going to pick the Vegas one. It's wrong. I've never done a drug in my life. But I'm just saying I'm more likely to do that. So it has an addiction section, and it's going to be weirdly accurate. Right, twos, when they're feeling love-starved, love sweets and carbs. And you go, ooh, it's hard for twos. Not hard for me, right? They'll have a compatibility section. So if you figure out that you're a nine and he's a five, go read about your compatibility. It's like they've been living in your house. I do it with some couples work in marriage therapy, and they go, it's like they were listening into our arguments. It'll tell you what you do well together and what you do poorly together. So I love the Enneagram. There's so much to go into it. We don't even have time to do it justice today. We're just kind of getting you excited about it. Enneagraminstitute.com. It'll have your type. It'll have what you do in stress and health. It'll describe you to yourself. It has addiction section, compatibility section. At the end is the growth recommendations. Each number has five. And I most often repeat them to my wife. Her first three words are, okay, the first three words I give to my wife, learn to relax. It's not me, it's your Enneagram, so it's not me, I don't get in trouble, but I'm saying you got to learn to relax. Mine are resist your impulses. I've got to resist my impulses, and I'm healthier when I do. And so the real goal of the Enneagram is, what do we do with this? Get along with people better, accept people where they're at, don't try to twist them into being like you, because they're right for them. And more than anything, work on your log, don't work on other people's specs. It doesn't work that way. And the Enneagram gives me five things to work on, and they're weirdly accurate, specific, and helpful. So go to theenneagraminstitute.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and look at your growth recommendations. I copy and paste that all the time and send it to clients. We figure out what number they are. I'm like, hey, let me send you this so you can like print it and post it somewhere to work on these five things. And then we each get a little bit better at being us. EnneagramInstitute.com is my favorite. That's my go-to. I go to it every day in my work with clients. And in the compatibility section, it's really talking about a marital relationship, but I think we can extrapolate to a working relationship. If you're in a relationship with an 8 and a 2 is in a relationship with an 8, what do they do together? And so I think we can extrapolate from a marital specific issue to a larger corporate working environment. So EnneagramInstitute.com is my go-to. Oh, there's so many good things out there. Malcolm Gladwell is a great, great author, and he writes a lot about geography. Happiness, A Geography of Bliss is a great book about just different regions and how we do things. According, you know, my family came from Scotland a long time ago, and so we settled in the Appalachian Mountains because it resembled the highlands of Scotland. Well, those people tended to be very tribal because you can't steal crops, you can steal cattle. And so the Hatfields and McCoys from Kentucky came from that geography. That's why there was 1,000 murders in a county of 15,000 people in the 1800s. Because they absolutely hated each other because we're very tribal. And so part of it comes from our geography. My wife is very much in the Korean culture. If dad says something, that's it. You don't argue it. And so her one personality, I don't know if it was honed from that, but we had to work through that as a marriage issue because I have a lot of uninformed opinions. And she would ask me something. And I'd say, well, do this. And then she would do what I said, and then she'd be unhappy. And I'm like, well, why'd you listen to me? That's weird. Nobody listens to me. So we actually practiced her saying no to me because I want you to do what you want to do the way you want to do it. I'm not your dad. I don't want that kind of house where I say something and then you do it. I was like, that sounds horrible because I have a lot of uninformed opinions and I'll tell you what I think, but don't do what I say. And so a lot of it's cultural and there's probably a lot of work to be done on that. But that shapes the flavors because even though you're a 7, every 7 is going to look different depending on where they're from, how they grew up, birth order, culture, geography. That shapes the flavors of how we're so different. Because you can't put 7 billion people in 9 boxes. It's not that easy, right? But if there's 1 million flavors of each type, you can do that. Okay, thank you so much for your attention and for being in here. I hope this spurs you to continue the journey, not to end it here, but to dive into it and find ways for it to be helpful at your agency. So thank you very much.